Now, thirdly and lastly, the third characteristic, the third lakshana, is anatman, literally the no-self or the non-self. This teaches us that all conditioned things are not only suffering, not only transitory, but are devoid of a permanent, unchanging self, or if you like, selfhood. I've really dealt with this the week before last in the talk on the analysis of man, so I need not go too far into it today. Perhaps it might be helpful on this occasion to speak a few words on the meaning of the word Atman. I remember many years ago, my own teacher, who was an Indian Buddhist monk, used to say that one cannot possibly understand what the Buddha meant by anatman unless one understood, first of all, the contemporary conception of atman. He told me a rather amusing story, by the way, in this connection about his own experience in Ceylon. He apparently once got up in Ceylon in the midst of a meeting, a gathering of Buddhist monks and laymen there, and he made this point. He said, we're all discussing about anatman, but surely we should try to understand, first of all, what is meant by atman. The Buddha denied atman, but what was he denying? What was the contemporary belief or doctrine? What did the Hindus of his day believe about the atman? Let's go into that, then we can understand the Buddha's position. But his rather subtle point of view wasn't very acceptable, and several rather orthodox people got up and said, we don't want that Hindu philosophy here. So he just sat down. But it's true what he said. You can't understand what the Buddha meant by anatman unless you know what Hinduism means, at least Hinduism of the Buddha's day, by atman. Now there are many conceptions. In the Upanishads alone there are very many conceptions of atman mentioned. Some Upanishads say that the atman is the physical body. Other Upanishads say that the atman, the self, the soul if you like, is just as big as the thumb, it's material, and it abides in the heart. There are very many different views, very many different doctrines. But the most common one, in the Buddha's day, the one which he appears to have been most concerned with, asserted that the atman, the self, was first of all incorporeal, or immaterial, conscious, unchanging, individual, that is, I and you are you, sovereign in the sense of exercising complete control over its own destiny, and also blissful. Now the Buddha maintained that there was no such entity, and he appealed to experience. He said, if we look within, if we look at ourselves, if we look at our own mental life, we see that there are only five aggregates. We see that there's form, we see that there are feelings, there are perceptions, there are volitions, and there are acts of consciousness. We see that all these are constantly changing. There's nothing permanent. We see that they all arise in dependence on conditions. There's nothing sovereign. We see that they're all riddled with suffering. In one way or another, there's nothing blissful, ultimately. So there's no self. Atman. The five aggregates are an atman. The five aggregates don't constitute any such self as the Hindus of the Buddha's day had in mind, neither does it exist in them, or outside of them, or associated with them in some other way. All conditioned things whatsoever, without exception, are dukkha, anicca, and anatman, are suffering, are impermanent, and are devoid of self. So these are the three great characteristics of all conditioned existence, all conditioned life, in all its forms.